Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today's Wednesday, January 29th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The UN Security Council calls for an immediate ceasefire and respect for DRC's territorial integrity.
We stand in firm support of the Congolese people and of the sovereignty and territorial integrity of the DRC, and urge Rwanda to respect the same.
We'll take you to Goma, where M23 rebels are still in control of the city. Somalia's Puntland region blocked the illegal entry of foreigners in a crackdown on the Islamic State. Nigeria sees a surge in terror attacks in the country's north as analysts raise concerns.
It appears to be that the objective of that particular attack is to weaken the response capability of the Nigerian military.
And Namibian officials are hopeful that aid will resume after Trump's 90-day freeze. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The UN Security Council is calling for an immediate ceasefire and respect for the territorial integrity of the Democratic Republic of Congo. The call comes after M23 rebel group says it has captured the key city of Goma in eastern DRC. Moses Javier Rimana reports.
During the UN Security Council meeting that was held on Tuesday in New York, the council members called for an immediate ceasefire and the resumption of the Luanda-led peace dialogue to resolve the conflict which has taken thousands of lives in the eastern part of the Democratic Republic of Congo. Dorothy Shea, who is the interim U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, said that Rwanda should withdraw its troops from the DRC.
The United States condemns the seizure of Goma and urges this council to consider measures to halt the territorial advances by Rwandan troops and M23. We stand in firm support of the Congolese people and of the sovereignty and territorial integrity of the DRC, and urge Rwanda to respect the same.
The Democratic Republic of Congo government said that the Security Council has failed to take action on Rwanda despite evidence of backing the rebels, a charge Kigali denies. Therese Kayikwamba Wagner is the State Minister of Foreign Affairs of the DRC.
Rwanda's outright contempt for the Council and the Council's declaration and its demonstration that there is a Rwandan exception when it comes to international law. But what has also brought us here 2 days ago to opt for words and not for actions. This council is not unable to take actions. In fact, it is uniquely equipped to take actions. Hence, the question that remains at the end of this meeting is whether this council is unwilling to act.
According to the United Nations, the recent clashes in the North Kivu province have led to over 178,000 people to flee the province after the M23 captured the town. Rwanda's permanent representative to the United Nations, Ernest Ruamucho, accused the UN peacekeeping forces and DRC government of trying to overthrow the government in Kigali.
The deteriorating security situation in the eastern DRC has only one immediate cause: the obsession by the president of the DRC for a military solution and thirst for regime change in Rwanda. This situation could have been solved a long time ago if President Tshisekedi had demonstrated political will and good faith in finding a lasting solution to this conflict.
Despite Rwanda's denial that it has troops in DRC, Kigali indicated that the presence of the FDLR rebels in DRC poses a threat to the country. Rwanda says the DRC should remove the rebel group, which is accused of committing the 1994 genocide in Rwanda. The French ambassador to the UN, Nicolas de Riviere, called for an immediate ceasefire and for Rwanda to withdraw its troops from DRC.
Alors nous parlons. Le M23 prend le contrôle de Goma avec le soutien actif du Rwanda.
He says that as we speak, now the M23 have taken control of Goma with an active support of Rwanda. He says that France condemns this attack and that M23 rebels should stop the attack and return to dialogue. Rwanda and the M23 rebel groups are under heavy criticism for violating the DRC's territorial integrity and the killing of the peacekeeping personnel in Goma, the capital of North Kivu province. The East African Community heads of state will hold an emergency meeting today on Wednesday to de-escalate the conflict that has destabilized the eastern DRC for more than two decades. Moses Aviarimana for Voice of America.
M23 rebels were still in control of the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo city of Goma, which they said they captured on Sunday. United Nations officials reported violence, looting, bodies in the streets, and gender-based violence in the city, according to the Associated Press. Reporter Al-Katanti Sebiti Jaffa in Goma tells me that the M23 rebels were consolidating their control of the city on Tuesday.
The situation is now changing a bit because we are seeing the M23 rebellion taking more and more control of those sides of the city which were occupied by FRDC and Wazalendo. So M23 is in control of this neighborhood. But some fighting and resistance stays in some neighborhood in the north of the city of Goma, and also the south of the territory of Nyiragongo, such as the neighborhoods called Majengo, Katoi, and the villages like Buhene, Turunga, and Tanzani.
Jaffa, was there any counter-attack from the DRC army in an attempt to reclaim Goma?
No, because officially the army had left the city, but some soldiers which stayed in the city and didn't accept to surrender, they are the ones who are facing M23 and fighting were intense. But there is no way for the FRDC to counterattack because Goma was isolated by M23 before the fall of the city. And as now M23 are in the city, the last position of FRDC around Goma is at 100 kilometers. For example, in the north direction, the first near position of FRDC to the city of Goma is in Alimbongo, which is around the 150 kilometers. So a counterattack can be organized by FRDC.
The people of Goma, how are they adjusting to the occupation of the M23 rebels?
In some neighborhoods, especially those in the west part of the city, people were allowed today to walk, to live, and to visit some areas. But in some neighborhoods, people are still in their house. And many areas, we saw a lot of store shops and supermarkets being looted by locals. As you know, for around 10 days now, Goma was missing food because of the fighting and the flooding of the city of Minova. So young people took benefit of this fighting to loot all shops of Goma, all supermarkets of Goma.
So what is it like for you, the journalist, in Goma?
As all local medias are not working, journalists are, for now, like all other citizens, in their houses. But today, myself, I tried to work. I went out with a camera and I met some M23 officer who called me, checked my IDs and confirmed that I'm a journalist. Then one of them told me, it's not a good idea for you to work at this moment as we are cleaning the city. Go back home and tomorrow you can start working after we ensure that the city is clean.
That was reporter Jaffa Al-Katanti speaking with us from Goma, Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. The humanitarian situation in and around the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo city of Goma remains extremely worrying, according to UN Humanitarian Office. Eleanor Asumani is the head of public relations for the International Committee of the Red Cross. She spoke with reporter Eddie Isango of VOA's French and Lingala services.
The current humanitarian situation in Goma is extremely worrying. We support a hospital, a CBCA and Dosho in Goma, in which we've had to receive more than 700 war wounded since the beginning of the year. So that's only 3 weeks. Just as an example, for yesterday only, we received 148 war wounded. And the capacity of the hospital is of initially only 146 beds. So you can imagine that people don't have any space. We've had to treat people in corridors because we're lacking space. We've had to transform the main restaurant into a hospital ward. We've had to set up two tents as well to put up the capacity of the hospital ward.
There were heavy fights until this today. How are you doing your work? It seems that there are still on the streets so many bodies. Is it easy for you to accomplish your work?
Our teams have been able to keep on working, mainly those at the hospital, since they are in the hospital, welcoming, receiving all the war wounded, the war injured. The rest of the team, with the situation that has calmed down in the last few hours, have also been able today to get out of the refuge where they were in our office to protect themselves from the bombs. As the International Committee of the Red Cross, we also have in our mandate our dialogue with all parties, and this also allows us to circulate in a way that we can do our job and continue to assist those in need.
What about millions of IDPS that were already in the city as the fight was so heavy around the city and in the city since 2 days?
Indeed, just like you, we've heard of all the IDPs, all the displaced people that were in the camps and that have left nearly instantly as the combats were getting nearer and nearer from where they were. As I was saying earlier, our teams that are mainly in the hospital or in the office, they haven't witnessed this themselves. All we know is that we've had influx of patients and of wounded people coming from Goma and from around Goma that we are treating.
Now, Asomani is the head of public relations for the International Committee of the Red Cross. She spoke with reporter Eddie Isango of VOA's French and Lingala services. Kenyan President William Ruto, chair of the East African Community Heads of State Summit, has called for an emergency meeting to discuss the conflict in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. Bram Verista is a senior researcher with the Institute for Security Studies, a pan-African think tank headquartered in Pretoria, South Africa. He tells me that the Luanda Peace Initiative, hosted by African Union mediator and Angolan President João Lourenço, appears to be the best option for peace.
The reason that they broke down, actually what happened was there was a ceasefire which had been put in place since August. And in the framework of that ceasefire, DRC and Rwanda were engaged in talk, which revolved around transactional agreements. Let's say, on the one hand, what was agreed upon was that the neutralization of a Rwandan armed group within DRC, which is called FDLR, which has its root in the genocide against Tutsi in Rwanda and has been present in Eastern DRC for over 30 years. And in exchange, Rwanda would lift its defensive measures in Eastern DRC. There had been talks on various levels towards a disagreement, but towards the end, when the presidents were supposed to meet on 15 December, prior to that, there was a disagreement on requested engagement of the Congolese government would actually promise to engage in talks with M23 in the framework of the Luanda process, which the DRC refused. And because of that, President Kagame did not come to Luanda to sign an agreement. And since then, the talks have been actually postponed. But the talks officially are not collapsed. They are postponed. So the framework still exists. Rwanda is a bit more critical about this process. It has talked about finding different ways, maybe bringing in different actors. President Kagame was in Turkey last week. Turkey offered its support to mediate, which led to some speculations that Rwanda might be looking for a different approach. But officially, they still adhere to the Rwanda process. I think this is still the best bet for the international community, for international organizations, to get them back at the table in the Luanda framework.
We hear most often the need for Africa to resolve its own problems. Is this possible with the situation in Eastern DRC?
This is a very good question. And of course, I talked about the Luanda process, but it is only one of the responses and processes that exist to deal with this. Another one, it's called the Nairobi process, which is led by the East African community, which is focused more on facilitating a dialogue between the Congolese government and armed groups. And Kinshasa has expressed its willingness to engage with M23 within this Nairobi process.
Bram Verist is a senior researcher with the Institute for Security Studies, a pan-African think tank headquartered in Pretoria, South Africa. He was speaking with me from Belgium. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, January 29. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Security analysts in Nigeria are expressing alarm after a surge in attacks by terror groups in the country's north near the border with Niger. The deterioration of relations between Abuja and Niamey followed Niger's July 2023 coup has disrupted joint military patrols, creating opportunities for armed groups to intensify incursions and attacks. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
Last Friday's killing of 20 soldiers, including a commanding officer at a military base in the remote town of Malam Fatori, are among the latest attacks by terror groups. Malam Fatori is located near Nigeria's border with Niger. Suspected fighters from the Islamic State West Africa province, ISWAP, arrived in trucks outfitted with guns and overpowered Nigerian troops in a coordinated assault. The attack took place 3 weeks after a similar raid on a military base in nearby Damboa in Borno State, where 6 soldiers were killed. On Sunday, Nigeria's defense authorities announced that 22 soldiers died during military operations against militants in Borno State between January 16th and 25th. They also said troops killed nearly 80 militants during those operations. Kabiru Adamu, an analyst with Beacon Security and Intelligence Limited, explains the growing challenge.
If the Nigerian military does not take steps to fortify those locations where we would see attacks around that proximity increasingly, and that's exactly what we're seeing, it appeared to me that the objective of that particular attack is to weaken the response capability of the Nigerian military.
The terror threat is not limited to northeastern Nigeria. In the northwest, a new militant group called Lakurawa is wreaking havoc in remote communities and crossing the border into Niger. Nigerian authorities first raised the alarm about the group in November, stating it has ties to jihadist factions in Mali and Niger and had embedded itself in communities along the Nigeria-Niger border for years, marrying local women and recruiting young men. Strained relations between Nigeria and Niger following the July 2023 coup have disrupted joint security operations, allowing groups like ISWAP and Lakurawa to expand their activities. Nigeria is already engaged in a protracted counterterrorism war. Security analyst Senator Irebu says the government must adopt a more proactive and comprehensive approach to addressing the insecurity.
I'm not surprised about the emergency, and there was a kind of some reports in past years about the growing link between the bandits or banditry or what is happening in the Northwest and terrorist organization. And I don't think the authorities made any concrete effort.
Last week, a federal court in Nigeria declared the Islamist Lakurawa group a terrorist organization, allowing the military to use maximum force against the group. Timothy Obiezu, VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
Health officials in Namibia are reacting with caution to order from U.S. President Donald Trump last week that freezes most U.S. foreign aid, though the country receives U.S. aid to bolster health care, especially the fight against AIDS. Authorities say the 90-day freeze will have minimal impact, at least in the short run. Vitalio Angula has more from Namibia's capital.
An estimated 219,000 people in Namibia, about 13% of the adult population, have either HIV or AIDS, giving the country one of the highest prevalence rates in the world. About 3,800 people in Namibia die from AIDS each year. Still, Namibia has made significant gains against the disease over the years, even surpassing the United Nations Sustainable Development Goal of having 95% of the population tested and effectively treated for HIV. Two American agencies, the U.S. Agency for International Development, USAID, and the President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief, PEPFAR, have been crucial to Namibia's progress. That aid is now on hold. But Kalumbi Shangula, Namibia's Minister of Health and Social Services, believes the hold is temporary.
We are confident that the review will find no deviation from the intended purposes. And I am confident that after the review, the funding will resume to the programs which are supported by the United States of America.
The Trump administration announced last week that the 90-day pause will be used to determine whether U.S. aid is being used for its intended purpose and whether beneficiaries are acting in line with U.S. interests. Nicodemus Kamangoti is part of an organization called the Rights Not Rescued Trust. The organization receives U.S. funding through KPSTAR, a program that provides access to HIV services for key populations. KPSTAR sets up mobile vans at night to provide HIV and reproductive health services, including HIV testing and treatment and access to family planning options. Kamangoti says his organization has received millions annually through U.S. aid since it started its activities in 2008. Due to the funding freeze, the mobile vans are grounded now. He is hoping the funding will resume in the future.
Currently, we have been really affected by that issue. Actually, the decision that the president has taken, but as a human being, I respect his decision.
Asked how Trump's executive order will affect U.S.-funded programs in Namibia, Tiffany Miller, the public affairs officer at the U.S. Embassy, told VOA in an emailed response that, consistent with President Trump's executive order on re-evaluating and realigning United States foreign aid, Secretary of State Marco Rubio has paused all U.S. foreign assistance funded by or through the State Department and USAID for review. He is initiating a review of all foreign assistance programs to ensure they are efficient and consistent with U.S. foreign policy under the America First agenda. Vitalio Angula, VOA News, Windhoek, Namibia.
Thousands of families fled their homes in Sudan's North Darfur state over 2 days, the United Nations Migration Agency said on Tuesday, amid intensified attacks by paramilitaries. Between 25 and 27 January 2025, an estimated 3,960 households were displaced from various villages across El-Fashar locality, the International Organization for Migration said in a statement. The paramilitary rapid support forces, the RSF, at war with the army since April 2023, have captured every state capital in the vast western region of Darfur, except for North Darfur capital El-Fashar, which they have besieged since May. In its latest attempt to capture the city, the RSF last week issued an ultimatum demanding that the army forces and their allies leave the city. And that's it for this Wednesday, January 29th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for coming aboard with us this morning. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Barton, Washington, saying, have a lovely day.
Hello, this is Linor Mudu, host of Health Chat. Join me for the latest in health news, wellness tips, medical breakthroughs, and much more. Our experts inside the United States and beyond will share some insights on living a healthy life. Tuesdays at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. VOA. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5-minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour.